The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. Welcome, welcome. Nice to see you all this Monday evening. As many of you know, Sunday was the solstice, Sunday morning, I guess. Here in the northern hemisphere, of course, is the winter solstice, and our friends in the southern hemisphere is the summer solstice. The longest night for us up here, shortest day, and the official start of winter. And I'd like to start us off with a poem about the solstice. It's by Rosemary Traumer. What a surprise. And the title is Walking into Winter Solstice. Walking into Winter Solstice by Rosemary Traumer. And it goes like this. Because it is dark, I walk in the dark. Walk with no moon, walk with the chill of the measureless dark. There is peace that comes from letting the self be with the world as it is. And tonight, it's a dark world. A world where I cannot see far ahead. A world of silhouette and suggestion. A world that seems to cherish whispers and relish mystery. A world where the invitation is to walk in the dark without wishing it away, without championing its opposite. The invitation is to be the one who learns how to live with the dark. This idea, this emphasis on dark here in this poem, associated with the winter solstice. I know I have often wondered, like, what would it be like to live closer to the equator where they don't have these big changes and to not have these short days and long nights? Maybe it'd be terrible, I don't know. Because those people I know that live in parts of the world where they have more seasons than we do here in California, they often say, oh, I love the seasons. I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what I hear. And I wonder if I would be the same if I were to live near the tropics. Would I be missing that the short days and the long nights? Nevertheless, tonight I want to talk a little bit about this word dark and unpack it as it's seen here in this poem. Two ways we can think about it. One is maybe a little bit more literally, that is the absence of light that doesn't let us see clearly. It makes it difficult to see clearly the darkness. And then another way we can think about dark is maybe a little bit more metaphorically, the way that sometimes things can be difficult, challenging, and it feels like, oh, the dark times, or when maybe low mood, low energy, something like this. Then I also want to talk about this notion that she introduces in this poem, the peace that is available. Oh, let's see, what are the words here? There is a peace that comes from letting the self be with the world as it is. What is that peace? And I'll introduce a practice that I've talked about before. So this idea of the dark, of not seeing clearly, thinking of dark, it's this way. Sometimes this type of practice that we teach here, insight meditation, is called vipassana. And vipassana, one way it can be translated as to see clearly. That's what insight, we could say, is like to see clearly. So there's this real emphasis on being able to see, which we might say is, we use this verb see, but is to understand or know or maybe be present with experience in some kind of way. The opposite of, you know, not being able to see. Maybe not seeing is also this way of uncertainty. This way that the dark maybe feels like, the future is unknown, or maybe even the present moment is unknown. I'm uncertain of if I'm petting the cat or the dog here. They're both furry, but I can't see anything. I don't know, I'm just making this up. Probably we could tell they have different fur, but. So this idea of this, where the poem says, there's a world where I cannot see far ahead. Let's be honest here. We can never see far ahead. We just think we can. It's just not possible. Right? We can just see what's here. Instead, we are postulating, conjecture, hypothesizing, predicting. And to be sure, we can do a certain amount of predicting. There was a time in my life where my profession was to predict, like, oh, how this molecule seems to behave this way in this context. So based on that, we predict it'll behave in a similar way in, you know, this different context, and then do the experiments, and sometimes it was true, and sometimes it wasn't. A lot of science is about this, right? But so much of our life is about this, too. Where there's this idea of like, oh, I don't understand, or I don't know what's going to happen next. Maybe I'll make a little aside. I'll say, I am fascinated about how much of the media, when a big event happens, how much of the media is like, well, what do you think is going to happen next? And then I interview this person and this person and this person. I'm like, who cares? Just wait 48 hours and we'll know. It's quite something though, right? But it's kind of points to how all of us, like, we want to have a feeling like we know. We don't like this sense of uncertainty. But the truth is we really don't know. We can have educated estimates, but we're always surprised. We're always surprised. I was just reflecting this morning when I was looking to see, okay, so what time will the rain start, and when will it stop, and when will it be the heaviest, and what about tomorrow? You know, looking on which hours, you know, so that I can do activities. And I was thinking, like, I remember it wasn't that long ago when it was just, is it going to rain, yes or no? And that was good enough. We had no idea if it was going to be the morning or the afternoon or anything, right? And now we want to know to the hour and just wait. Oh, no, now it's not only the hour, but, well, how much rain? What exactly is the likelihood, right? So this is pointing to, even if we do have more certainty, it's never enough. We always want more. And so there's this way in which the mind makes stuff up to fill in the future. Of course it does. And again, some of this is educated and might be very close to what actually happens. Some of it isn't. And of course we do. It makes sense that we do this. But sometimes we get into trouble with this. If we have this sense that things should be one way and then they're different, if we're trying to fill in the blanks, or this way that the mind is building stories, running scenarios, and searching for interpretations. But maybe there's a way in which we are just making these suppositions that really affect how we show up in the world, and then they don't turn out to be true. This happens a lot with people. People who wear those kinds of socks are the type of people who go hiking. Or, and those people that go hiking, oh, they're always bringing in dirt into the hall, in the social hall, and we can't trust them. I'm just making this up. This isn't true. But, you know, there's this way in which we can take one little piece of data and then zoop, just make a big story out of it. Sometimes it's harmful, actually. This is where bias and prejudice show up. There can be a way of, maybe even with the rain, like not too long ago it was raining and I had made plans to meet a friend to go for a hike. Like, oh, it's raining, should we still go? Yeah, let's go. It turned out to be fantastic. You know, just, but when there's this idea like, oh, it's not going to be sunny, it's going to be wet, it's going to be cold or something like this. Just bringing this idea. I remember the last time I did this and it was wet and cold and a little bit miserable. And then this time it wasn't, right? It was just lovely and delightful, actually. Kind of fun. So there's this way in which we want to see the future. And sometimes the future just means the next hour or the next week. And because we want to, this is perfectly normal human thing, we are filling in the blanks, perfectly legitimate, but we start to think that how we filled in the blanks is how it should be, dang it, or how maybe we're no longer with how the actual experience is, instead we're just with our idea of it. For example, this one that I gave about, like, oh, let's not go hiking, it's going to be raining. And then we have this relationship with this idea of it's going to be raining and it's going to be miserable. And completely disconnected from the experience of actually this moment, which is really all that we really know. Maybe it'll be that way. Maybe it won't. There's a way in which the mind kind of like treats this notion that it can't see the future as an emergency, like it has to fill it in. What would it be like to just be with our experience as it is, and to let not knowing be not knowing? I can see, and certainly I've done this myself too, where we confuse like the clarity with safety. We feel like, okay, I want to feel safe, therefore I need to know exactly what's going to happen. I don't know, so I'm going to make stuff up. This is often what happens. But the real safety actually comes with being able to be with whatever arises, with some openness and presence and wholeheartedness as best we can. This small confidence, maybe it's a big giant confidence, like, I don't actually know how it's going to be, but I trust I'll find my way. I'll ask help, ask for help if I need to. Maybe I'll be really confused, and if that is the case, then I'll just be confused, and I'll know what the experience of confusion feels like. So one way to meet with this, of course, is to see clearly, is to have some equanimity. This notion of even when we do not have the full picture, what's happening, can we just be with the experience right now? Because we'll never have the full picture. Never. Even like right now, this moment, like we don't know the interior life of everybody that's here. We don't know all the thoughts that are arising. We may not even know what is going on inside ourselves. Right? There's this way in which we just, sometimes we don't even realize how tired we are or how distracted we are until we actually sit down and try to meditate. So is there this way that we can turn not knowing into something that's not a problem? And just to be equanimous, have some balance, have some openness to that experience, some equanimity. So equanimity is not so much saying, oh yeah, I like uncertainty. Uncertainty is fine. It's wonderful. It's more like uncertainty is here, and I can be present for that experience of uncertainty. Just recognizing that this wish to want to know, and to say, well, I don't know. And can we experience that? What does it feel like to just not know? And to not be like looking, or, you know, trying to find what we think will be the answer. There's this way of, I don't know, there's this quiet confidence that's not that we know everything, but that we can be okay in the midst of not knowing. And I remember early in my practice, sometimes I would get confused, like in meditation, like maybe touching into some new experiences and feel like, whoa, what's happening? And I'd feel a little bit frightened by this. And I remember talking to a teacher and saying, I don't know, I get confused. And I've said this before, but this has been such a great help in my life, just to say, no. If you know you're confused, you're not confused. You know there's confusion. So I'm just saying, oh, yep, confusion is here. Not knowing is here. But if you know that there's not knowing, then that's knowing. And there's something that feels comfortable about it. It's not insisting that it be different. So there's this way in which darkness can be this idea of not knowing, not being able to see clearly, but also darkness we see in this poem. It's kind of something about maybe dukkha. And many of you will be familiar with this word dukkha. It often gets translated as stress or discomfort or suffering. And it's this one single word that represents this huge range from just the mild little sense of something's not quite right to a horrifying, terrifying experiences. A single word that covers this whole range. And we could say that this darkness is also part of this dukkha. This poem, one of the lines is, there is peace that comes from letting the self be with the world as it is. And tonight, it's a dark world. Sometimes it can feel like that. Maybe dark in terms of like feeling oppressed or really tight and closed in, not a feeling of openness and ease. This poem doesn't say, there is peace that comes from when the world finally becomes bright again. Or there is a peace that comes when we finally fix everything and everything that was uncomfortable has left. Instead, letting the self be with the world as it is, and much of our suffering, much of the dukkha, comes from our not being with the world as it is. Things want to be always just a little bit different. For the most part, that's not a problem. We can make adjustments in our posture, for example. We can scratch an itch. We can, you know, these small little discomforts. But real freedom is being able to have some peace no matter what's happening. Not only those times when we feel the most comfortable. And so we start with the easy things. We start with just like, okay, can I be with the discomfort of being in the waiting office, waiting room of the doctor's office? Waiting. When are they going to call my name? You know, to go in there. Or the discomfort of getting an email and like, I'm not sure exactly what this person wants here. Really? Yeah, then just like, am I supposed to respond to this now? Or I don't know, sometimes that can be uncomfortable. Like, are they expecting me to take care of this now? Or what should I do with this? Or we start with some of these small ones. Can we just notice those discomforts and allow them to be there? But dukkha, a lot of dukkha is what we might call the second arrow. There's this, maybe the discomfort of, I'm just mentioning these minor ones, waiting for the doctor's office or getting a confusing email, but they are giant things that happen. Terrible diagnoses. Death, loved ones, sickness, these types of things. Terrible loss and grief. And then our relationship to the discomfort can make it worse. The way that we may be wishing it away, she says in this poem. Dang it, when is this going to go away? And this kind of feeling of like pushing and wanting it to be different. And there's this resistance, this aversion, which makes the discomfort increase, actually. It's like aversion of the discomfort kind of just increases the discomfort. Not only because aversion is uncomfortable, but just there's a way that the resisting like amplifies the experience in some kind of way. And there's this way that sometimes this aversion looks dramatic, like anger, and sometimes maybe it's just ordinary, just this restlessness or always being distracted and can't quite settle down. That itself can be an uncomfortable feeling of never kind of quite settling during the day. But there's also another second type of arrow in which Rosemary Traumer says in this poem, and this idea of championing its opposite. This idea of that when we have difficulties, we could call it the dark here, there's a way we could say, we have to find the light. Everybody, okay, get all your lights. Bring all your flashlights and your lamps and your cell phones together. And we have to make as much light as possible. And hey, you over there, you should have more light. Or I don't know, there's this way in which we can kind of like even like just a way to ignore the difficulties and just be going towards the opposite. We could say it's a way in which aversion is maybe being more polite or in nicer clothes in some kind of way. You know, it's pointing to something different. I once had a practice discussion, this is quite some time ago, with somebody who was talking about, well, practice is just about bliss. You just have to find the bliss. And I was talking with her about this. You know, she had come up through a different tradition and kind of had brought that idea here. And something that I was pointing out with her, when you sometimes have these ideas that it should be the opposite of dukkha, for example, bliss as an example, then you find yourself always measuring. Is this blissful? I think it could be more blissful. Oh, this isn't bliss. And then there's this disappointment and there's this sense of me. I have to make it be more blissful. I'm failing if it's not blissful and all this kind of stuff. So we might think when there's dukkha, some of this darkness, we want to do the opposite, but that often turns into more dukkha too. So again, we bring to this idea of this equanimity. Can we be in the middle, not having this aversion, not wishing it away, and not championing its opposite? Nope, this is what's happening right here, right now. As best we can. And this is so much what our meditation practice is too, right? We're being with the breath. And when the mind wanders, we just come back. There's this way that being with the breath allows kind of, we're choosing that as an anchor, allows the mind and the body to settle. But importantly, it shows us how often our mind is elsewhere, is wanting to go elsewhere. This turns into a habit of not wanting to be with our experience. So you might say, okay, Diana, that sounds interesting, but is there some ways we can do this, some supports for this? I'll offer this practice. I've mentioned this a few times. I love this practice. RAFT. Recognize, allow, feel in the body, trust you don't have to fix it right now. RAFT. Raft, right? Something that can carry us across the difficulties. Recognize. Just as I was saying, like, if you know that it's not knowing is happening, there's a way that, like, oh, knowing is happening. There's a way of just actually saying, like, I'm uncertain and I wish there were certainty. Something just recognizing that that's happening can be helpful. A, allowing. Can you just, for that moment, allow it to be there? Recognizing that we so often want to push things away. Can we just back up a little bit and allow? Some people say, for A, they want to say accept, but for me that feels like too tall an order. Allow is, it's already happening. It's like, can you just align with the reality of the moment? It's already there, whatever it is that the experience is. Recognize, allow, feel in the body. Can you be embodied in any way that's available? The pressure against of the cushion or chair against the body, feeling your feet on the ground, feeling your breath, feeling your hands. Part of the way is to interrupt what the mind is spinning, which is all going into the future, trying to project things, and just help bring us into this present moment. So to feel in the body. And sometimes that allowing, you might even feel that. You might even feel maybe the jaw just loosens a little bit. Or maybe there's this softening of the forehead. Maybe there's a way we can be, I can't remember right now what the word is, but with our eyebrows we can be doing all kinds of things that are like brrr, kind of growling or something like this. And maybe not even know that we do that. So maybe feeling in the body includes noticing how the allowing in a subtle way can allow some more softness in the body. It works both ways. Softening the body allows us to allow our experience, and allowing our experience softens the body. So whichever lever is available, you can work with that one. And then trust you don't have to fix it right now. There's this sense of the mind and the body always trying to fix things, these things of being this emergency. But when we do this, recognize, allow, feel in the body, trust that you don't have to fix it right now, then that allows for some equanimity, for this balance. And then there's a way that we can see more clearly what's to be done next. Speaking truthfully without aggression, for example, or setting a boundary without hostility, or maybe there's a way we take action without any sense of panic or urgency when there really isn't an urgency, or maybe there's a way we can wait without numbing out. So RAFT is a way that helps support this idea of equanimity. And then maybe the next wise step is something very small. Maybe it's just be with the next breath. Maybe it's take a walk. Maybe it's ask for help. Maybe it's go to sleep. Maybe it's happening in the middle of the night. So I appreciate this idea that we don't have to see everything. Because so often our trying to understand everything prevents us from actually being where we are. And this is part of life, you know, is to balance this. Because many of us have parts of our life where we're waiting for things to be just perfect. We tell ourselves, oh, well, when I understand better, when all this is clarified, then I'll do, I don't know, whatever it is. Then I'll start walking outside regularly. Then I'll repair my relationship with so-and-so, or then I'll volunteer and support something that's meaningful for me, or when I feel better, when I'm more confident, when I'm less afraid, oh, these things. Oh, thinking like, oh, the future somehow is going to be better. Well, can we just be with this moment? Even if it feels like there's some darkness here, and we don't see what's happening. So I'm going to close by reading this poem again. It's Walking into Winter Solstice by Rosemary Traumer. Because it is dark, I walk in the dark. Walk with no moon, walk with the chill of the measureless dark. There is peace that comes from letting the self be with the world as it is. And tonight, it's a dark world. A world where I cannot see far ahead. A world of silhouette and suggestion. A world that seems to cherish whispers and relish mystery. A world where the invitation is to walk in the dark without wishing it away, without championing its opposite. The invitation is to be one who learns how to live in the dark. This idea that, you know, it's going to be dark sometimes. Can we just be with that? As best we can. As best we can. So, maybe just as a very simple practice this upcoming week, when you notice yourself wishing something away, maybe it's a feeling or maybe it's this moment of uncertainty. Can you just name it gently? Aversion is here. Resistance is here. I'm wishing this were different. And can you allow the experience to be there? Yep, it feels like this. Might be uncomfortable. Chances are it is uncomfortable. Feel in the body. Feel anything in the body. Just kind of like get embodied, get present, get here, and kind of interrupt all what the spinning the mind is doing. And then trust that you don't have to fix it right now. And then maybe the next wise step becomes known then. And there's a little bit of settling and less of the pushing and pulling that's happening. So walking into the winter solstice, being with the dark, not seeing clearly, and being with difficulty, meeting as best we can with equanimity, and practicing with recognizing, allowing, feeling in the body, and trusting we don't have to figure it right now. Thank you. And now I'll open it up to see if there are some questions or comments.
Well, just a comment for sure. I pressure myself to fix things immediately. And that's fantastic hearing it from you, that I don't have to fix it. Well, when time comes, it will be fixed. Something like that. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome, you're welcome. I know, right? We often have this pressure, like, oh, I have to fix this right now, take care of it.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. Anybody else have a comment or a question?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Dana. I'm Jordan.
Hi, Jordan.
I used to practice here years ago. And I kind of wanted to make a comment. Because this year, well, Since the last time I saw you, I lost all my grandparents. And lost my grandma this year. And, you know, some unfortunate stuff happened with my family. And at one point, there was a lot of anger. And I guess the training kicked in because I stepped outside for like 2 hours and sat through it. And like reflecting on that now, instead of like reacting or saying something or doing something, just being able to like breathe
nice,
through it.
Nice, nice.
You know? So that kind of came up for me, you know, that happened earlier this year. And I'm glad I had that tool, you know, to like help me through a tough time. I guess, you know, I have a question maybe. You know, when times get really tough and, you know, we're trying to maintain a daily practice, you know, sometimes it feels like maybe I need to take a step back, you know, because the thoughts can be intense. And so it's like, you know, how to deal with that, how to continue on practicing when it gets hard.
When you say to take a step back, you mean take a step back from practicing?
Yeah.
And when you say practice, are you talking about like a meditation practice?
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah. And yeah. You're saying that sometimes the thoughts can be hard?
Yeah, I mean, I've been, you know, going on Vipassana retreats, so I can get in touch with what's going on. And then sometimes it feels like I'm going a little too deep, you know, or like, it can get scary or frightening, you know. So it's where I'm at right now. It's like I know that I want to continue my practice and how to, like, navigate through tough times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I'll say when you're meditating, you can always open your eyes. Mm-hmm. And this can be helpful sometimes to even practice this, to just, like, be meditating and then, like, purposely open your eyes and then kind of just become present again with what's happening. And then just there's this way that knowing that there's always an escape valve, there's always a different experience available. We don't have to, you know, just stay if we get into some territory, some experiences that feels too uncomfortable. So I'll say that's one thing. Two is, it can be a tremendous benefit to understand ourselves better. You mentioned how, like, when something awful happened, just terrible, and then your anger came up, and then you were able to step outside for 2 hours. So you learned that you have that capability to do that. And sometimes if we can be with meditation when it's uncomfortable, we start to see, well, what are the ways in which we work with difficulties? I'm just making this up, Jordan. I don't know exactly how it is for you. You mentioned anger. Sometimes anger arises. Sometimes blaming other people, blaming ourselves. Sometimes collapsing. You know, we just feel like, oh, this is too much. I can't do it. And wanting to run away or something like this. But just recognizing our patterns in what we might call like the laboratory of meditation can be enormously helpful in our daily life. Because we can start to see, oh, okay, I know how I start to check out when the difficulty starts to arise or I want to leave. And just knowing this about ourselves helps us to maybe bring some more awareness to our actions and maybe choose, like, I'm going to try not to do that so much if it's causing harm or something. So one, practice opening your eyes. Two, it's an opportunity to learn about yourself and how you, patterns that are there for responding to difficulties. We all have these patterns. Three, I don't know, can be helpful to ask, why do we meditate? Is it just to have good experiences? Some people it is, and that's perfectly legitimate. Is it just to help support relaxation? That's perfectly legitimate. But I'll speak for myself. It has really, touched me deeply and changed my life in ways that I couldn't have even imagined just by hanging in there. So that was a lot of words that I just gave it its own little second Dharma talk there. But it was how does this sound?
Well, I can relate to, you know, what you just said about, you know, how meditating and getting into it has changed my life in many ways that I never thought was possible to. You know, so that gives me, like, faith to keep going, you know, to hear it from you too. So thanks.
I remember that you were coming here years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and I spoke a few times.
Yeah, I sat a retreat with you at the retreat center many years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's good to be back. Good to see you. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Jordan. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have a comment or question?
This isn't very formulated, but I was struck in the poem with her talking about whispers and mystery.
Yeah.
So I think of, you know, darkness as the not knowing, but I think of whispers and mystery as sort of like an invitation to try to, I mean, often with whispering, I want to lean in to try to hear better. And with mystery, I tend to want to try to understand. So I'm just, and I was sort of, I'm not really sure exactly what I'm saying, but just like, it seems to me there's like a balance between allowing the little tantalizing desire to try to get closer to some experience versus leaning away from it and being okay with not knowing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for highlighting this. Like, darkness can mean a lot, and even mystery, like there's a whole genre, right, of books, like mystery, we kind of like it, to kind of like figure things out or something like this. Let's see what she says, to relish mystery. Like, oh, not knowing, and how, what's going to happen here, who done it, that kind of a thing. Yeah, so darkness is maybe sometimes fun, too. And what does she say here? Cherish whispers. I'm not sure how to interpret that. Do you have a sense of what that means? Something, cherish whispers?
It's something to me like the promise of not knowing.
Oh. Maybe like being surprised, like enjoying being surprised, or
it's either surprised or like discovering something.
Oh yes, very nice. Yes, right, to discover something. Yeah, so there's a I see what you're pointing to, right? So sometimes it's perfectly appropriate to be like, okay, to figure something out. But what I want to point out to you is, can we be with this moment, and then maybe what arises the next one, like, oh, it's time to go figure this out. Instead of just always going to figure out, just, and we're never really here.
Right.
So maybe sometimes the next thing to do is to solve the mystery. And solve the problem, yeah.
But not being lurching towards that,
yeah,
and compelled to go straight to say, what did you say, or yeah, I gotta figure this out, but more like sit with the not knowing.
Yeah, and even the same with the not knowing might just be a very short while. I like what this word you use, compelled. It's sometimes we just feel pushed, and that's not freedom, right? Freedom is like, oh yeah, I think this is the wise thing to do now, this is the beneficial thing to do now, and to do that, as opposed to this compulsion to have to figure everything out, fix it, or whatever. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So, happy solstice. Just a few days late here. And for those of you who celebrate the holidays, happy holidays. And let's say I'll be here before New Year's, right? Today's the 26th. I'll be here on the 29th. So, I'll wish you Happy New Year on the 29th if you're here. So, thank you.